It is good to see so many out this morning. Appreciate y'all being here. And you know, this building always was outstanding to sing in, and it still is. It has great acoustics that lifts you up when you sing. I appreciate that very, very much. We just finished at the school that I direct the quarter, and all the kids, matter of fact, I left on the last day of finals, and they have finals. Some of those finals that they have are comprehensive. It's over everything they've studied in the course, and some of the finals are over whatever the last week studied, depending on the teacher and how it is that he wants to do that. It is appointed unto men once to die, and after this, the judgment. That's a comprehensive final. And it's a final that is the final of all finals. There'll never be another. And the reward of that final is not red marks on a page. The reward of that final is eternal damnation or eternal life. Our lives are so busy. They're filled with so much, and we have the capacity to fill them with things, and not always necessarily important things, but just things. Things that we like to do or things that places that we want to go. And so we fill our lives. And maybe sometimes in the course of that, we spend a day. And in that day, we don't really think about God at all. In that day, we don't think about, what if I had died an hour ago? Where would I have spent eternity? Sometimes things are happening in life, in our world, and people think about eternity pretty often. What I'm hoping to do this morning with this lesson, there's not going to be anything spectacular here, but I think you're going to understand where we're trying to go. I want to touch your heart about the importance of thinking of eternity every single day. But because if you do think about eternity every day, somewhere in that day, you're also going to think about, how do I stand in relation to eternity? And that's a thought that needs to cross our mind. So let's look at some ways. You know, I've always been amazed for a long, 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 long time. It has amazed me what Psalm 19 and verse 1 says. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. And he goes on to say, day unto day at our speech, night unto night, knowledge. And there is no place, no land, no place where their words have not gone out. In other words, the trees that you see out there, the bodies that we see in here, the ability to see and hear and talk and think, all of that says God is. None of this just happened. And so God has presented, matter of fact, the power of that presentation of information is referred to in Romans chapter 1 in verse 20, where he says concerning those who have not decided to think about God, that they were without excuse for not knowing that God exists, because since the beginning of the world, people could look at the creation and come to a conclusion of God. That's what he expects of us. So he has put it everywhere. Everywhere you might go in this world, there's something that screams, think about God. There's something that says, God made all of this. And in saying that, there's something that says, you must obey God to be ready for that final test. So when we talk about thinking about eternity, it's important stuff. So let's look at some things. Let me ask you this. You got up this morning. You sat up in bed. Unless your alarm scared you out of bed, you didn't jump out of bed. You sat up in bed and you put your feet on the floor. When you did that, did you think about the idea that this might be your last day on earth? It could be, right? And in thinking about that, which I hope you did you think about offering a prayer to God? Did you think about asking yourself, where am I in relationship to where God wants me to be? What a tremendous concept when we get out of bed. And David said, this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it. And I'm beginning to wonder if I pressed this wrong. I know that wasn't supposed to be in that spot, but that's the point that I want to make from that spot. How about when you see a child playing? I love these little children that are running around. I love to hear children crying in the services for about 5 seconds, you know, and then I'm just glad to know that they're there. What a great thing that children are. But one of the most impressive, and my children did this, and probably your children have done this, and I've noticed it in some of the children here already. Matter of fact, it came up, it was just day before yesterday, Friday, drove up into the parking lot out here, and Cy and Becky were here, or they pulled up shortly thereafter, and they got out, and Cy had a toothpick in his mouth. And so did both the kids. They had toothpicks in their mouth too. That's what we do. Our kids try to fit into our shoes. When you see a child, when you have a child, when you get to somehow be part of a child's life or have a child in your life, don't you wonder about their eternity? All these kids are cute. And they're going to grow up to look like me. Or you. But don't you want them really to grow up thinking about eternity? Ephesians 6:4, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and in the admonition of the Lord. I'm thankful for Christian parents because I know that Christian parents, at least most Christian parents, think more often about the eternity of their children than maybe other people do. But every one of us, think about the fact that all these kids that are in here, all of you in some way or another are an example to those kids. What a need there is for you to be thinking about your eternity so that you are leading them to their eternity. Train up a child in the way he should go. What are we supposed to do? Train up a child in the way he should go. That has to do with our example and the things that we say and the things that we do. How often do we think about the fact that where I take my eternity will be where they take their eternity? Something for us to think about. We live in a war-torn world. When I was living somewhere, I don't know where I was living. Anyway, I went to Civil War Museum in Virginia. We started going through. It was middle of the day. Teresa and I were about the only ones that were there. And we were going through it. And it's graphic. I don't know if you've been there and walked through it, but it's graphic about what the war was. And the longer I looked at it and saw the people stretched out dead on a battlefield and maimed, and I began thinking how many souls that was lost. And it doesn't happen to me often, but I just got literally sick. Had to leave the building. Everywhere in our world, there are millions of people dying without God. Now that's their fault. And it's our fault. It's their fault because God's everywhere. They could find him. They could search for him. He's not far from every one of us, Acts 17 says. You know, we can feel after him and find him. But it's our fault. Why isn't it the case that by now, I mean, 2,000 years later, why isn't it the case that there's not the Lord's church on virtually every corner of every subdivision, so that block, the people in that block, can walk down there to services, and that can be their worship? Well, I know some of the reason it's not is because not everyone wants to listen. I understand that. But sometimes it's because we haven't thought about eternity in a while. We haven't thought about eternity for the other person in a while. And I know we're just talking about war here, but think of all the circumstances and all the ways that people die unprepared. You think about eternity when you prosper? There's a lot of ways to talk about money. The most talked about subject in the Bible, by the way. I don't know if you were aware of that or not. And it's because where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And so God wants to see to it that we are thinking properly about money. In Luke 12, that man didn't. You know the story of the rich farmer. You know, God blessed him. God blessed him so much that he didn't have anywhere to put all his produce. And he's talking to himself. He said, what shall I do? I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns, which he had been blessed with already, and I'll build bigger barns, and I'll lay up all this extra profit that I've got, and I'll say, soul, take thine ease. You have much goods laid up for many years. You know what he forgot? He forgot to think about eternity. He forgot to think about what will this have to do with my eternity. And he learned, thou fool, this night your soul will be required of thee. Then whose will all of these things be? You know, I'm getting close to death. Maybe not as close as I think. Maybe 90 will be an age that I reach. Or maybe not. But I look at the stuff I've got. I particularly look at my tools. I don't look at the stuff inside very much. And I'm thinking, what are my kids going to do with all this stuff? They'll use an item or two of it, but most of it, somebody's going to have to move. It's going to be expensive. It's just stuff that I've gathered. And if I'm not using that stuff to somehow further the Lord's cause, somehow further the Lord's kingdom, somehow make a difference in somebody's life about eternity, I need to be careful. Because I might come to that point where, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee, and whose shall all of these things be? Surely we do know. Surely we have realized we are not going to take it with us. As a matter of fact, most of that stuff, years ago when I lived here, Van's dad went into the warehousing business, or maybe he was already in the warehousing business, I'm not sure. And I thought, that's a great business to get into. And it would have been, and is. They're still building. Isn't it amazing? And maybe they do this in other countries, and I've been in some other countries, never seen anything like this. America is the only place I know of that we build things to store stuff we won't look at for 15 or 20 years. But we won't get rid of it either. And I don't know, maybe there's a place for storing some of those things, but You know, is it not true that every possession that we have is first of all God's? It belongs to Him. And is it not true that every way in which we prosper is simply in order to use it for the Lord's cause? That could be individually for people that need it. It could be in the case of the contribution that we give on every Lord's Day. But when you prosper, what do you think about it? I'm going to give you a direct example. Let's say you're living on $60,000 a year, $40,000, it doesn't matter what it is, $30,000, $120,000, but you're living on it, and you're making it. You're eating every day, you've got the transportation that you need, things are going fine, and you get a year-end bonus. And the year-end bonus this year is $10,000. And boy, it starts popping in our mind what we can use that $10,000 on, and the boat that we can buy, and the vacation that we can take, and this, that, and the other. And it very seldom crosses our mind, you know what? I already have everything I need. I'm given to the Lord now. So I not only have everything I need, I have blessings beyond what I need. I could give this whole thing to the Lord and never miss it. And find, did you know that the $10,000 would support a dozen missionaries in India for 3 or 4 years? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That's what I mean about, that's what he failed. That's what this rich man failed to do. He got all that stuff. He had the blessings. And he thought, man, I got all this extra. And he never thought about eternity, his own, or the eternity of other people and what he might do with it. I'm spending some time here at this spot because we are the richest nation on earth. We absolutely are. The poor among us are taken care of in a way that's beyond the average worker in some of the third world countries. And I know we have advertisements and we have political speech all the time of people that don't have food and they can't do this and they can't do that, but it's there for them. Maybe it's not being properly handled and properly distributed, but it's there. So you and I, there's nobody in here that thinks they're going to miss a meal tomorrow. I'm pretty satisfied with that, and I don't know y'all very well, but I'm fairly satisfied that that's probably true. It's probably never the time that, like the widow did, she came and she gave all that she had to the Lord's work. We probably never done that. All of those things, that's thinking about eternity. That's where we're saying, this is going to make a difference. What am I going to do with it? What about when you see a funeral procession? We don't do this much in this country anymore, but when I was growing up, funeral came down the road, everybody pulled over to the side. And with respect, let that pass. There are some places that that's done. I see it done in Tennessee quite a bit still. I don't know if it's done everywhere. When you see a funeral, I want you to think back. Think back to the last time you saw a funeral procession. Did it cross your mind as they were driving by, I wonder if he or she was saved or lost? I wonder who she was. I wonder if I could have helped him to know the gospel. I wonder if I ever ran into him in a town. This idea of the funeral is so important. You know what? In Ecclesiastes 17, you know why God said it's better to go to the house of mourning where the funeral is being held. It's better to do that than to go to a party. House of feasting is what King James said. But then to go to a party. Because, he says, the living, that would be you and I if we're going, will lay it to heart. What will we lay to heart? Hopefully, and I don't know that this happens, you know, the body's laid out and people are lined up and they're walking by and they're viewing. Hopefully somewhere in there, they're wondering, what will people be saying about me when I am laying there? I hope that the next time you see a funeral, you go to a funeral, or you see a funeral procession, that you'll think about eternity, their eternity, which is too late to do anything about, and your eternity. And maybe, by the way, is something we don't do a lot, but as that procession passes by, and we realize, oh, that's so-and-so. Sometimes we do know. We know who it is. And they've got living family. Living family that right then are vulnerable to contact that might change their eternity if we make that contact. So maybe it drives by and you're like, well, I wish they'd get by so I can get out and get back on the road, you know, if you pulled over. Maybe you didn't even think about it as it went on. But what an opportunity. What about when you hear of a child being born? Every child that is born has started the road in eternity. Before they're born, they're not there. But once they're conceived, really, at their conception, not just at their birth, but at their conception, they have a soul. They're on the road that will take them to either eternity in heaven or eternity in hell. And every single one of us want to think that every child that's born is going to have eternity in heaven. Children are, I love this statement in Psalm 127, children are a heritage of the Lord. In other words, that's what God has allowed us to leave behind. It's what He has left to us to leave behind. And He says, blessed is the man. You know, they're like arrows in the hands of a mighty archer. And blessed is the man that has his quiver full of them. Wow. What a time to think about eternity. Babies are cute, aren't they? I mean, it's just hard to believe. You look at them and they got these five little bitty fingers. They're just like your fingers. And they got these toes that are just like your toes. And this, you know, it's just all in miniature. We love things in miniature. We love miniature cars. We love miniature ships. We love miniature everything. And kids, they're a soul in miniature. Do you think about eternity then? And boy, you've got a lot of opportunity here. Every time you meet, think of the kids that are running around over in the playground over there, or running around out here in the street, or how about when you're driving by and there's a bunch of kids playing in their yard? Shouldn't that bring to our mind, what's their eternity going to be? And what am I doing to make sure that their eternity is going to be what God wants it to be? My family and I love rainbows. We actually call each other when we see a rainbow. We love rainbows. Because rainbows are a special message from God that I'm here and I keep all my promises. I keep them all. And that means the promises of eternal loss as well as the promises of eternal blessing. Rainbows, I think rainbows fascinate all of us. It's kind of like, oh, there's a rainbow. You know, and we love seeing it. But I hope, you know, at the same time that happens, that it's, there's the promise of God. There is a proof that He says, I could hear, well done, good and faithful servant, And he wants to pronounce that, and we think about eternity. And I think about quite often the fact that the rainbow, you know, it spans. It spans a distance. Once in our lifetime, my wife and I were able to drive to both ends of a rainbow and see both ends while it was still up there. You don't do that much. Most of the time we don't even see the end of the rainbow. But that rainbow, it covered thousands of people that were beneath it. Thousands of people that I knew had never heard the truth. Thousands of people that I was sure had a mixed up notion about what the church was and what the church should be. All of these things that we're looking at, it's just God saying, I'm here. Don't forget about me. Think about the things that are important to think about. Remember that your life here is just, remember what the Hebrew writer said? We're a pilgrimage. We're just pilgrims. Pilgrims are people that are passing through. We kind of settle down on this earth like we live here. Not where we live. Not where we're going to live. Matter of fact, this is all going to burn. This is all going to be destroyed. And so, we're going to live somewhere else. In eternity. That's the time for us to think about eternity, is when we see that beautiful rainbow and it's God saying, I keep my promises. I want you to be saved. Here's how you do it. But by the way, if you don't, I keep my promises. There will be a judgment day. There'll be a final exam, as it were. Surely you think about eternity when you think about worship, when you're at worship. Maybe not. I grew up, right? I remember being a kid. You remember being a kid? I remember. It's not that I remember thinking about it this way, but I know for a fact that I sat in some services where I probably didn't even think about God much, let alone about eternity. You know, as a kid, I had an interest somewhere else. Think how difficult it is for us as parents to help our children believe what David said here. I was glad when they said, let us go to the house of God. I mean, I was glad about that because we're going to get to worship God. Kids, a lot of kids, I think, say, oh, my mom makes me go to church. My dad makes me go to church. Sometimes, what do you think about this? And I know it's a matter of semantics to sometimes, but sometimes we say, no, I got to go to church that day. I got to go to church that day. Not, I get to go to church that day. Not, no, that's the time I have an opportunity to worship the Lord. I'm not going to plan anything for that time. But I think that sometimes we're not thinking, you know, Sunday night rolls around and we're tired and well, we got to get up and go. And Wednesday rolls around and we got to get up and go. Or a gospel meeting like we've had this week rolls around and we got to get up and go. And so a lot of times we don't. But you know what worship is? It is a time, I mean, this is something God set up. God set up a time that His people could come together and both by their encouragement to one another and by the songs that are sung and by the prayers that are offered, we can think about eternity in a way that we don't have the quietness and the time and the guidance to think about it at home when we're on the job. I mean, there are a lot of ways we can think about it then, but not like we can here. Not where we have the opportunity to use our minds to think about where we really are. What a great idea to think about eternity. Well, of course, there's this. You know, have you ever thought about the fact that there's no example in the Bible of having an invitation at the end of a service? And some people in our time have said, well, we all know, there's no reason we have to have an invitation every time we meet. Jesus said, Matthew 11, you're familiar with it, come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden. I will give you rest. He said, come and take my yoke upon you, different than the yoke that we're carrying that Satan has put upon us. Come and take my yoke upon you. He said, learn of me. My yoke, it's easy. Now there's the catch. We sometimes don't think about Christianity as being easy. We don't think about the changes in our life as being easy. But we're kind of missing the point of what it's about. Over there in 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3, he was talking about, this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. That word means difficult to bear up. His commandments are not difficult to bear up. And yet we look at a lot of things that God has commanded us to do and a lot of things God has commanded us not to do, and we think that's really hard. But see, we're not thinking about eternity. We're not thinking far enough. If you keep on thinking about that, it's like a man decides to smoke and he ends up with cancer. And another chooses not to, and he lives cancer-free. I know those aren't guarantees. I'm just using them as an example. And he lives cancer-free. What's the difference in those things? One of them realized that this action today, which leads to countless other actions, has an end that's not pleasant. And the other thought, no, I don't want that end. I want this end. And so we have this opportunity of an invitation. Why wouldn't we offer it every time we meet? Why wouldn't we? When we have opportunities, we're doing things that are spiritual in nature. Why wouldn't we want to give the invitation Christ gave? Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden. And what they're laboring under is sin and the wrong outlook on sin. Sometimes people think their life is wonderful. I mean, everything's great. Their finances are good. Their health is good. They live in a great place. They got a lot of good friends. They don't even know that they're unforgiven. Because all that goodness, that doesn't forgive anything. There's something else about the invitation that I think is important. The invitation is a time for you to ask yourself whether you are right spiritually. In this town, right about this time, I'm going to say, this morning, there are probably, let's just be conservative, there are 30 different kinds of churches that are meeting. You know, that's a phrase that shouldn't even cross our lips. Different kinds of churches. It shouldn't be anything like that. Jesus said, upon this rock I will build my church. There was just that one. And he purchased, Acts 20 and 28, he purchased his church with his blood. Just one. And I want you to latch onto this for your future thinking as well as for thinking now. Somewhere a long time ago, well, I know where it was. It's actually recorded in Genesis 5, that men began to call on the name of the Lord, and then Romans 1 tells us they decided not to keep God in their knowledge. So somewhere a long time ago, men decided we want to be religious. We want somehow to assure our salvation. We want there to be something better like, the Egyptian pharaohs would fill their pyramids up, their tombs up with things that they could use in the afterlife. They had a firm belief in the afterlife. You've got the same things with the Aztecs, same things with the Mayans. You've got You've got the same thing with Buddhism and Hinduism, Shintoism. All of those are, you know, let's prepare for the afterlife. Let's prepare. As though we have the right to prepare our way instead of God's way. I mean, 30 different churches, and as I say, I think that's probably conservative if we take the entire county for sure. Not different churches. I don't mean different congregations. I mean different kinds of churches, different kinds of congregations. When Pentecost happened and the church was established, nobody was ever going to ask anybody, what kind of Christian are you? Have you ever had that asked? I've been asked that. You know, you have a discussion about Christianity and you're a Christian. Well, what kind of Christian are you? Well, I know you're just a Christian, but, you know, I'm a Methodist or a Baptist or a Catholic or whatever. You know, we have over 40,000 different religions registered in the United States. Different religions registered. That's according to the Bureau of Census. Okay, so when we say that, that's why people ask, well, what kind of Christian are you? Because we've got all those. But don't you know that from God's perspective, there's just one kind of Christian. There's just one kind of church. There's just one kind of worship. There's just one kind of way to live godly. There's just one outlook to have on eternity. My life, like yours, gets busy. And I'm afraid there's probably not many days go by that I don't think about God, but there are days go by that I don't examine myself. That's not smart. As a matter of fact, in the very fact that it happens, it says that I'm not ready for eternity. I mean, every dime that I have belongs to God. Every minute that's mine belongs to God. Every method of living, method of raising children, method of worship, even what we did this morning and taking the supper the way that we did, every detail was the responsibility of God, and He handed it down to us. And He said, this is the way that I want you to be. I know that many of you in here are Christians. And it's probably the case that there are some here that are sure that they're Christians who still haven't done the things that God said are essential to do in order to be a Christian. And just the saying of that to a lot of people is offensive. Well, how dare he question where I am religiously? Brother and sister, it is not me questioning it. As a matter of fact, nobody's questioning it because we don't need to question it. God knows. I don't even have to know. But God knows. And He's told us, here's what you do to become a Christian. Here's what you do to stay a Christian. Here's the way you worship as a Christian. And here's where you want to be when it's time for eternity. I hope that in the days that follow, you will think about eternity a great deal. Since Jesus walked the earth, His law has not changed. He gave it to His apostles. It wasn't published yet when He was on the earth, but He died in order to bring His will into effect. And he told Nicodemus. Nicodemus didn't quite understand it. But he told Nicodemus, he said, except a man be born of the water and the Spirit, he cannot enter in the kingdom of heaven. And there's nothing mythical about that or mythological about that. It's just a man, through the information gained from the Spirit in the Bible, must be willing, as Peter said on the day of Pentecost, to repent and be baptized. That's the way into Christ. And if you're not open to that idea, and I say this in all the love, because there's so many of you I don't know and have never met. If you're not open to that idea, you're on the wrong end of eternity. This is just that important, because it's what Jesus said. And then Jesus also said something else. We had I don't want anybody to get mad about this. We had a meeting this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have at least twice as many people here right now as we had on Friday and Saturday. And I know there are things that cause that. But I just have a feeling that some of you never gave serious consideration to what God wanted you to do Friday night and Saturday night. Maybe I'm wrong. But I just have a suspicion of that. And I know if that's the case, I say this because I think it's helpful. I know you're on the wrong end of eternity. When the Hebrew writer said, it is appointed unto men once to die, and after this the judgment, that was serious business. And a preacher that stands up and just kind of makes things all nice and makes you feel good about it, that's serious business for him. You need to know, we're all headed for eternity, every single one of us. One day we're all going to stand before the judgment seat of God, and we're going to give an account of the things done in this body, and that could be moral issues, but it could be obedience issues. Actually, those two kind of roll into one, don't they? This morning, if you've never been baptized into Christ, into the Lord's church, not into a 40,000 different churches, but into the Lord's church, I beg you to do that, because let's think about eternity that's in the future. If you have been baptized into Christ, and you just kind of go about it haphazardly, you know, you're with him sometimes and sometimes you're not with him. You spend more effort thinking about what you want to do with your time, your week, your day, your money, your energy, than you do about the Lord. I hope that'll change this morning. When we ask, and preachers do, they say, if you're subject to the invitation, what we mean is, if there's something to make right with God. So if you need some study, I promise you the brethren here, and I would too, be happy to study with you and help you understand. If you're wanting to serve God, but you don't know exactly what that means, we'll study with you about that. But if you already know what you need to do, I beg of you, don't be close-minded about what God said. Let's do it. Answer Jesus' invitation while we encourage you with song. Shall we stand?